Last week, three people drowned in Lake Mead in 3 days, and the number of drowning deaths in the lake has already hit the average for most years. Officials at Lake Mead have noticed a pattern. The drowning victims are often grown men who jump off a boat in the middle of a lake without a life jacket, and when they become distressed or fatigued, they cannot reach the boat in time. Francesco Pia is an expert on drowning prevention, and he joins us now. Francesco, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
There have been more than average, higher than average number of drowning deaths in Lake Mead this year. Are there any conditions on the lake itself that would make it a dangerous place to swim?
Water is an inherently dangerous environment. With that come some variables that can make the problem a bit worse. For example, if you have high air temperature and low water temperature, what can happen is if certain individuals have been out in the sun all day and they enter into cold water that's above their head, that can trigger cardiac arrhythmias that would cause the person to either have a heart attack or reduce blood flow or a variety of other physiological conditions that would prevent them from being able to stay afloat or to swim back to the boat.
Okay, and that certainly sounds like Lake Mead. It's very hot there, but the water temperatures, it's not terribly cold right now, but early in the year, in May, it can be below 70 degrees. Does that slow swimmers down? I mean, you've talked about all these stresses and such, but is it harder to swim when you're dealing with colder water?
Yes, it is. The body has a protective mechanism when it encounters cold water. What happens is the brain sends out a message to redistribute or redirect the blood flow from the periphery of the body, the arms and the legs, to the inner core. And what the brain is attempting to do is to protect the oxygen-sensitive parts of the body. But by doing that, paradoxically, what happens is you lose your ability to kick in the water, you know, a supporting kick, and also you lose the ability to use your arms. So if you can't float, you're in deep trouble at that point. And also, you know, with regard to, you know, specifically Lake Mead, where you have a situation where there's a big difference between, you know, the air temperature and water temperature, a good analogy would be, imagine what it would be like if you were in a steam room or a sauna for 15 or 20 minutes, and then went out the door and just jumped into or turned on a cold shower. Immediately you would, you know, gasp. And if your mouth, if that happens when you're in the water and you gasp, what happens is you're going to aspirate water. You're going to take water into your mouth. And what'll happen is that can then trigger, you know, various cardiac arrhythmias.
Now, in real life, drowning itself does not look like what it is made to look like in movies and television. Can you explain that to us?
What is usually shown in the movies and television is what I've termed and categorized as a swimmer in distress. And a swimmer in distress is someone who can pick up their arms and wave for help. Because they can keep their mouth continually above the water, they can call out for help, and they also have a supporting kick. So these are individuals who can summon help by waving or calling out for help. Now, a drowning person, on the other hand, is quite different. Drowning is, by definition, the actual or perceived suffocation in water. So when a person finds himself in a situation where they can't keep their mouth above the surface of the water, the body sends out, or the brain sends out, a signal that forces the person instinctively to extend their arms either partially or fully out to the side and then press down on the surface of the water and try to use the water as though it were, let's say, a table that would enable them to kind of leverage themselves up in the water to get their mouth above the surface of the water. That only works temporarily. So the drowning person will extend their arms out to the sides or partially out to the sides, press down on the surface of the water. Their mouth will break the surface of the water. They will exhale, inhale, and then the mouth will sink below the surface of the water again. And this process continues until either the person is rescued or until they submerge. And it's a very, very brief struggle. For children, it'll be as brief as 20 seconds. And for adults, it can last as long as a minute.
How big a factor is that misunderstanding of the signs of someone in distress? Do people simply not identify a drowning person in the lake right by them?
Yes. I think the biggest problem is that they're looking for signs that aren't there. And by that, I mean, in most situations where we're in trouble, we'll call out or we'll wave for help. Drowning is one of the few, if not the only, situation where that doesn't occur. So, for example, at the beach where I worked, we rescued about 2,000 people a summer, and it was the rule rather than the exception that you would find a drowning person surrounded by bathers who were unaware that the drowning was occurring because the person hadn't called out for help, hadn't waved for help. And unfortunately, the arm movements of the drowning person to the untrained eye looks as though they're playing in the water when they're actually drowning. Hmm.
So when a swimmer finds herself or himself in a dangerous situation and near the point of drowning, what should she do?
There's a difference, and I think it's an important one to make. There's a difference between a person with a swimming skill and individuals with swimming competencies. Now, the difference is a person who has a swimming competency is able to float for good length of time. They can tread water. They can do a variety of different strokes. Whereas someone who is just, quote unquote, a swimmer, generally they're individuals who can do, you know, the crawl stroke and that's it. And when it comes time for them because of fatigue, when they can no longer use their arms, they don't have the floating skill to self-protect.
Yeah, so if you see a drowning person and you are far from lifeguards yourself, what should you do?
Unless you have received lifeguard training, and unless you have received lifeguard training to make a rescue without equipment, you should not attempt a swimming rescue. Because what will happen is a single drowning will turn into a double drowning. The advice is to use an extension assist. If you can extend something to the drowning person, like a pole or a stick of some sort, the shepherd's crook that you see in a pool, you can toss them a ring buoy with a line attached. And in doing so, make sure that you toss the ring buoy so that it comes down underneath one of the person's thrashing arms, because they do not have the ability to stop the instinctive drowning response, acquire a swimming skill, and then reach out for the buoy. So you have to toss it so that their arm comes down upon it. Once that happens, then the person will pull the buoy into the, you know, in close, and they will then hold on to the buoy.
Now, the people who have drowned in Lake Mead this year have all been men, and men have a much higher risk of drowning than women. Why is that?
There's a body of literature that says men are a bit more, or can be a bit more impulsive in their decision-making than women. Men have a tendency to overestimate their swimming ability, while women, on the other hand, are a bit more realistic and even err on the side of underestimating their swimming ability. So when you put all those factors together, where you have, you know, a man who says, oh yeah, I'm a swimmer, I can do that. They may at one time in their life have been able to do that, but at the time when they're in trouble, they're not able to.
The U.S. Park Service is obviously trying to get out the message that people need to wear life jackets while boating and swimming in Lake Mead. How do they make that message stick for people who are on the lake?
There's a very simple saying. A life jacket won't save your life unless you're wearing it. So, and especially now, there are some life jackets that are not your big, you know, the traditional bulky kind that you very often see. They're ones that you can inflate by just pulling on a cord, and it will provide the buoyancy of a regular life jacket. So if individuals are uncomfortable wearing the heavier life jackets. The inflatable life jackets are very, very comfortable to wear. It's almost like just wearing a belt. And if you're on a boat, there's absolutely no reason whatsoever not to wear a life jacket.
Francesco Pia is the president of Pia Enterprises and an expert on drowning. Francesco Pia, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me today. I appreciate it.